Blog Talk Radio.
I felt hopeless about my debt. I felt very lonely, and I thought, what if I write about my process of getting out of student loan debt? Maybe I will find other people in the same situation as I am. I won't be so alone, and I'll be encouraged. And my blog was really the turning point into everything. It really helped me create a community of people that are fighting off debt. It inspired me. It made me feel useful. You know, to make a long story short, my blog led to a new career as a freelance writer and an event planner.
Welcome and thanks for tuning in to the Midday Money Show, your weekly shot of uncommon financial good sense. I'm Tony Husbands, a financial coach with the Debt-Free Divas, who loves talking about all things as they relate to your money. Is debt getting in the way of your dreams, or does it have you down? My guest today can definitely relate. After getting into the good debt, student loans, and can you see my air quotes? Melanie Lockhart found herself with limited means to pay it back. She was down. She was desperate. I mean, debt can do that to you. The stress caused by debt can damage your relationships. It can ruin your outlook on life. It can even begin to cause physical problems with your health. And that is no bueno, folks. The good news is Melanie didn't stay down. She didn't wait for the outside events to improve her situation. She created her blog as a therapeutic outlet, DearDebt.com. And it's turned into a new book by the same name, Dear Debt. People often find her blog by searching for this string. I want to kill myself because of debt. That's deep. If your stress is that real, know that September is National Suicide Prevention Awareness Month, and NAMI is an organization that you can reach out to for help. I'll have links to NAMI on our website, debtfreedivas.org, in the show notes for this episode. I broke up with $81,000 of student loan debt. Now let's let Melanie encourage you along your journey out of debt. And remember, folks, you don't have to face debt alone.
So let's talk about the debt. Did all of your debt come from student loans?
Yes, actually, all of my debt came from student loans.
And how much was it?
It was a total of $81,000. So I borrowed $23,000 for my undergraduate degree. And then the big portion that I borrowed was $58,000. For my master's degree at NYU.
Oh, nice. So
yeah.
So now you say you were paying some of that off. Were you paying it off during the time where you were in school?
It took me 9 years, really, is the unsexy version of the story, to pay back all of my debt. And
okay.
Part of that was because, you know, when I graduated from Cal State University Long Beach and got my bachelor's, you know, I had $23,000 in debt and I was sort of paying the minimum on it for 3 years. I just treated it like a bill.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't really think much about it because, you know, I thought student loans were the good debt.
Right, exactly.
Didn't even consider that I could pay more. You know, once I applied to NYU and I got in, that was when it really hit me. Oh my gosh, I'm going to take on a lot more debt if I do this.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I ultimately made the decision to go. And I still continue to pay the minimum on my student loans in college. So, you know, I would say I paid the minimum for about 5 years. And then, you know, once I graduated from NYU, even after paying for 5 years, I had $68,000 left in May 2011 when I graduated. And that was a huge wake-up call for me because I felt like I had been paying for so many years by that point. I'd gotten a bunch more debt from NYU.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, once I graduated, I didn't really get the job opportunities that I thought I would have, and it was such a struggle to look at that amount in the face and really come up with an action plan to pay it off.
Well, let's talk about your action plan then. So after graduating from NYU, you've added on this additional debt, and the job opportunities don't materialize. What's your next step?
Well, it's funny. I actually was in denial for at least 6 months after graduation.
Mm-hmm.
Shortly after I graduated, I, you know, knew I had to come up with a financial plan to pay back this debt. And I signed up for Mint.com, which is an online budgeting software.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I synced my loans, my income, my expenses. And that was really the first time that I saw that I owed $68,000 in black and white. And, you know, seeing how low my student income was at that point and then my expenses living in New York,
mm-hmm.
I panicked and I deleted my account.
Oh, wow.
I just was like, oh, this doesn't exist. I'm going to delete this now. And so I was just like, you know what? I'm trying to make it work. I'll figure it out. And sort of just pushed under the rug. And then really, 6 months later, 6 months after graduation, I was still in New York. I had went on 30 different interviews. My goodness, it was so exhausting. And I still didn't have a full-time job. And, you know, I realized I couldn't afford to live in New York any longer and pay back my student loans. And even though I hated my student loans, it was still very important for me to pay it back. And I was also in a long-distance relationship at this point with my partner, who was in Portland, Oregon, while I was in New York. So I decided to move to Portland to be with him and also lower my rent and pay back my student loan. So, you know, that was kind of a big wake-up call for me, because even though my partner was there and, of course, I wanted to be with him, it did feel very financially motivated also. And, you know, when debt starts to get in the way of your life and your decisions and your dreams, you know, it really sucks. And,
right.
You know, it felt like, you know, I went to NYU and was living this awesome New York life, and then I sort of just got kicked out to Portland, where I didn't necessarily want to live. And the struggles continued there, unfortunately, for a few more years. The economy is actually worse in Portland, I would say. At least it was at the time. I was only getting jobs $10 to $12 an hour with a master's degree, and all of them were temp jobs. For the first year and a half in Portland, which was the first 2 years after graduation, I could not find a full-time job for the life of me.
Wow.
And it was so demoralizing and frustrating. And, you know, I thought I had done everything right, you know, go to a good school, work hard, do well, and you'll be able to find a job and pay it back. No problem. You know, that's what I thought, even though I knew the debt was an insane amount. I just thought, it's a good school, good things will happen, I'll pay it back.
Right.
And, you know,
life didn't work out that way.
It didn't really work out that way for a while, at least.
Like you say, for a while. And that's a great segue, because I want to move forward in your story, if we can, or jump forward in your story.
Yeah.
At what point did the situation begin to turn for you?
So I would say that I really hit an emotional rock bottom, probably in all of 2012. You know, I had been living in Portland for, you know, probably that whole year, and really was struggling to find a job, was feeling extremely stressed about my debt load. I didn't love Portland at all, actually. I didn't enjoy it.
I've never been there. I've heard nice things about it.
It's nice to visit. It wasn't the place for me to live.
Gotcha.
But it's a good place to visit for sure. So I was just in this really deep, dark place. You know, I didn't love where I was living. I didn't love my living situation. I was barely bringing any money in, and just felt so weighed down by this debt. And it was taking a serious psychological toll on me, to the point where I was crying every day. I was feeling hopeless. I was feeling like, this is never going to resolve itself. This is just going to be my life from now on. This isn't what I signed up for. And of course, as you can imagine, this was taking a huge toll in my relationship. You know, no one wants to be with someone that's crying every day.
Right. I can imagine. Yeah.
So, you know, I went to therapy, and, you know, that helped a little bit, you know, to sort of reframe some things. And then just after a while, you know, I really got sick of myself, you know, like, oh, I'm so sick of myself. I'm sick of crying. I'm sick of feeling sorry for myself. I'm sick of everything, you know. And I just realized that I couldn't go on doing what I was doing, and I couldn't just wait for the outside world to make good things happen for me,
right,
you know?
Right.
And so I started my blog in January 2013, DearDebt.com.
Okay.
And I started it in January 2013 really as a lifeboat, as a way to keep me going, because I felt like I had no meaningful work. I felt hopeless about my debt. I felt very lonely, and I thought, what if I write about my process of getting out of student loan debt? Maybe I will find other people in the same situation as I am. I won't be so alone, and I'll be encouraged, and maybe this will help. And my blog was really the turning point into everything. It really helped me create a community of people that are fighting off debt. It inspired me. It made me feel useful. It made me feel like I was learning again and doing things. And, you know, to make a long story short, my blog led to a new career as a freelance writer and an event planner. So eventually the blog turned into another career and helped me create my own career, which was the best sort of surprise outcome.
Before the blog, were you ever able to find full-time work in your field of study?
Well, yes and no. So I was able to find a full-time job finally in May 2013.
Mm-hmm.
So that was about 6 months after starting my blog, about a year and a half after moving to Portland.
Uh-huh.
I finally found a nonprofit job as an events and communications coordinator, making $31,000. It wasn't exactly in my field, but I've always worked in nonprofits before this,
uh-huh.
so it sort of at least was in sort of the general arena.
Mm-hmm.
You know, by that point, I had already been sort of side hustling a lot and then finally found this job. And then hilarious because I quit that job 1 year later to be my own boss, you know, because of the blog, because of the writing opportunities I got from the blog. And so it was really hilarious because I started my blog with no job opportunities, feeling hopeless. You know, that led to side hustling. I finally got the job that I thought I wanted all this time. And then I quit after 1 year because I realized that I was making a lot more actually being my own boss than I was at a nonprofit.
At what point in this experience do you think your emotional state started to kind of, I guess, heal itself, if you will, or you started mm-hmm. to kind of rebound from the dark place you were in emotionally?
Yeah. I would say a few months after starting my blog, you know, I started connecting with other people in the community and making real friends. You know, once I got that nonprofit job, I started to feel a little less hopeless and, you know, that did a great deal for my confidence. And then side hustling really, really bolstered my confidence because mm-hmm. anyone that knows how tough it is to look for a job and to be continually rejected again and again and again.
Mm-hmm.
you know, knows what a toll it can take on your self-esteem. So to be able to create your own opportunities is so immensely rewarding. And, you know, so I was able to do that through side hustling, and that really sort of changed my self-worth and changed my money mindset. I realized I wasn't worthless. I realized I wasn't, you know, unemployable or whatever. And I really realized that I could harness my power to create my own opportunities and that I didn't have to just wait for other people to hand me stuff. Because I feel like that's why I was so miserable for so long. I was stuck in this very traditional mindset of working in a 9-to-5. This is the way things are supposed to be. This is what success looks like. And once I got rid of all those notions of this is what success is supposed to look like,
mm-hmm.
things really started to change for me.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
This episode is sponsored by Personal Capital, a free online tool that helps you keep track of your personal finances, folks. Track your spending, manage your investments, and keep up with everything through their secure mobile app. You can support the Midday Money Show and take advantage of this fabulous free tool by creating a free account with Personal Capital. Head over to debtfreedivas.org/personal and we'll show you the way. Can you talk a little bit about the side hustles? And then the other thing I'm curious about is, did the side hustles happen before you started the blog or as a result of the blog?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I did a lot of side hustles. And to answer your second question, the side hustles pretty much started actually back in New York. So when I was struggling to find full-time work in New York, I was like, oh, I need something to do now to make money because obviously the full-time job thing isn't happening. And that's when I really first found out about being a brand ambassador.
Mm.
And so being a brand ambassador is essentially being the public face of a company, you know, at conferences, at trade shows, sporting events, music events. And so I had worked this event in Central Park and made $20 an hour just talking to people, handing them out flyers. And I thought, that's a really great side hustle.
Yeah.
And so once I moved to Portland, that was sort of my main side hustle, was being a brand ambassador. It's a great job for extroverts. Obviously, I still like talking to people. I know, I have some introvert friends that are like, I could never do that. I would rather die.
Okay.
I totally understand.
But if that's your comfort level, then yeah.
Yeah. Brand ambassador was my main side hustle, but I also looked to Craigslist and TaskRabbit and did a ton of things. I was an event assistant. I was a pet sitter. I was a house cleaner. I helped sort things, you know, for like holiday bags.
Mm-hmm.
I helped someone move once. I worked a rave one time from midnight till 6 a.m. selling water bottles.
You hustled.
I did like anything I could do to make money. I was
gotcha.
Like ruthless. I was so hungry to support myself because I'm fiercely independent and I didn't want to rely on my parents. I couldn't necessarily rely on my boyfriend because he was a student at the time. And I just knew I had to take care of myself. And so I was hustling hard. And then, you know, my side hustles sort of were very sort of outside the house, you know, sort of physical based.
Mm-hmm.
And then once the blog started, that's when I started doing sort of freelance writing, freelance editing, freelance social media. And then it was more from home.
Okay.
After the blog.
Okay. So the blog is actually very interesting, deardet.com. And it's a bunch of letters, basically. How did you come up with that concept? Like, what made, I mean, even if you just started this blog, like, Dear Debt, what made you want to write a letter to your debt?
So when I first started Dear Debt, it actually wasn't called Dear Debt. When I started it in January 2013, it was called Do or Debt.
Uh-huh.
And it was like, you know, trying to play off the words. It's a do or die situation.
Oh,
the
okay.
Do or debt situation. I have to get out of this.
Gotcha. Uh-huh.
And first of all, when I started making online friends, people kept making fun of me because the URL looked like door debt.
Okay.
So that was kind of like, oh, it's not door debt.
Uh-huh.
And then like, secondly, you know, because I was looking for a job, I was also anonymous and really hadn't found my voice with my blog. You know, any new bloggers can probably understand the first 6 months are really hard.
Right. And is anybody listening to me? Yeah.
I know. You know, I felt like no one was listening. I felt like I really didn't know what my voice was or, you know, like what I should say. And I just felt like I was really struggling and didn't know exactly where I fit in the personal finance world. And then one day I really started to think like either I'm going to quit blogging or I need to think of something else because I just am uninspired and I feel uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just really honed in like what makes me so fired up about paying off debt? Like why am I so passionate about this issue? And I realized it was because of the emotional relationship with debt. It was making me crazy at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like it was an abusive ex-boyfriend that just wouldn't let me go, and I was being tormented. And I know that sounds dramatic. Remember, I was a theater major. But, you know, I was really interested in this emotional relationship with debt and money. And then I just came up with the idea, what if I write a breakup letter to debt?
Right.
And, like, it's an exercise for me to sort of reclaim my power and agency and my emotions. And what if I invite other debt fighters to write their debt letters as well?
Right.
And so at this point, I was connected with the Portland personal finance community. And I remember one night I was like, guys, I have this idea. And if it sucks, you have to tell me. And if it's good, you better not steal it. And I told them my idea and I said, you know, what if we write breakup letters to debt and I invite other people to do it? Like, what are your thoughts? And they were like, that's a great idea. And so right after that meetup, I came home at like midnight and I bought deardebt.com. And, you know, I wrote some Dear Debt letters. Michelle Jackson from Shop My Closet Project was the first Dear Debt letter author aside from me. So
okay.
I'm so grateful to her because she sort of kicked off the project.
Nice.
And, you know, it's been so wonderful since then because, you know, when you're just starting out, you're like, I have this idea for this project, but I don't know if anyone's going to contribute to it. And, you know, now it's to the point a lot of people just email me. Of course, I try to market it when I can, but, you know, people read the letters, they hear about the letters, you know, and they want to participate because it's a great way to take your emotions and put them on paper. And a lot of people say it's really cathartic. And I have to say it's true.
And I can definitely understand that. And the thing about it is you take debt letters from people who have already accomplished that goal, who've already paid off debt, and also people who are actually going through it, which is really interesting. It's really nice to read some of the examples. And I'd like to share just a portion of one here that just really spoke to me. In the 15 years we were together, you convinced me that my life was not possible without you. That if I wanted to do anything at all, it had to be done with you by my side. Somehow I believed you. I gave you so many of my precious years of life without ever challenging whether or not you were good for me. I bought into your lie that I couldn't survive without you. So yeah, I thought that was really like very powerful, very powerful. And just kind of an example of some of the realness, if you will, or the raw emotion that you have captured on your blog. So do you still accept letters from people?
Oh, I accept Dear Debt Letters from anyone and everyone, and I do accept Dear Debt Letters from people who are currently in debt and, you know, are out of debt. And I think that's an important part of the project, is that I do want to illustrate various perspectives. And I also want to show people that are still in debt that you can get out of debt, that it is possible. I think, you know, for so long, I didn't even think it was possible to get out of debt. So it's really important to me to share those stories of people who have paid off the debt.
Exactly.
You know, with the readers who are still, you know, in it.
Right. And I definitely appreciate you sharing your story about paying off student loans to the tune of $81,000, because, again, somebody else is probably staring at that number or figure something similar to that right now and trying to figure out, like, okay, how am I going to make this go away? I'm really glad that I was able to connect with you, because you're sharing some important, I guess, aspects of debt that maybe we don't focus on enough, but the emotional, the emotional toll that being in this perceivably insurmountable position can have on people. And it is, and sometimes perception is reality. If it feels like, you know, there's nothing I can do, then people can get stuck. And when you get stuck, and then you maybe dig yourself into a deeper hole, and just, you don't make any traction. And I love that you talked about, you know, you started your side hustles, and that action, that activity kind of reinforced that you were not a failure. You know, you were not, you were dead. I love that. And so I'd like to talk a little bit about some of your practical steps that you took to get out of the emotional state you were in, because you talked about talking to a counselor.
Yeah.
You started your blog. What are some things that people who, if they're in that situation where it's just looking a little like, I'll never, you know, I'll never be able to make this go away, what are some practical things people can do right now to kind of get out of that funk?
What I would do is, number one, calculate your daily interest rate. So if you don't know already, make sure you know your balances as well as your interest rates. I would say about $50,000 of my debt was roughly at 7% interest rate, and it was costing me $11 per day. And it drove me mad. Once I did that calculation and realized my loans were costing me $11 a day, of course I was upset at first, you know, very depressed about it, but then I got angry. I got, like, really irrationally angry because I felt like I was literally flushing $11 a day down the toilet for the convenience of borrowing this money. And I realized that I wasn't going to let this stupid situation ruin my life, and I was going to pay back this loan. And so I would say, calculate your daily interest and get angry. In a positive, proactive way.
Right, right. Redirect some of that energy, right?
In a proactive way. Secondly, look at your bills and see if there's anything that you can cut back immediately. You know, maybe you can negotiate your cell phone bill, you can negotiate your internet. You know, I would try anything. If you're really struggling to make ends meet, consider food stamps. That's what I did, unfortunately. It wasn't my proudest moment, but I knew that it would help me in my other areas of my financial life. And really focus on earning more also is what I would say, because I do think it is important to cut back for sure, for sure, for sure. But I was always kind of annoyed with that advice when I was paying off debt, because I had lived such a minimalist life with hardly anything to my name anyways, that I was like, I don't have a car to sell. I don't have all these things to get rid of. Like, I don't have a TV. I don't have cable. I don't have a car. I don't have a gym membership. I don't have a pet. I have none of these things that, you know, supposedly many people have to sell, you know?
Right.
Like, literally my nicest things are my clothes, which aren't that nice, you know, and I'm not going to sell those because I need to wear them. So, you know, I sort of came to the realization that I couldn't really cut back anymore. And I think a lot of people find that in their personal finance journey, that frugality is a great starting point. It's a really accessible way to find your next step. How can you cut your expenses? But it can only take you so far.
Right.
And, you know, I realized I had hit a plateau with my debt repayment and that I couldn't really pay more unless I made more money.
Right.
And so that's when I really started focusing on the side hustles, because I realized theoretically my income is limitless. You know, if I wanted to work 16 hours a day, I could, whereas you can only cut back so much. So I really focused on side hustling, and earning more is really what helped me. And I know there's sort of two different thoughts in personal finance. Like, some people think that if you earn more, it's not necessarily going to solve your financial problems. And I totally get that. If you don't manage it properly, making more is not going to help you. But in my situation, making more really, really helped because I allocated all of that extra money towards my debt.
And, you know, that is so important to say, is that, yes, make more, earn more can be a good strategy, but you don't want to get to the point where you're just making more to support bad habits.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so one of the things that we've been actually focusing on, which as I was researching and looking through, you know, your great work, I was really excited to have you on and talk about exactly how your side hustle experience has been, because the freelance option is something that I've been focusing on with our community team Debt Free here lately, about really figuring out how, you know, using the internet. That's the beauty of what we have these days, is that your side hustles don't necessarily have to be an in-person experience. You
mm-hmm.
can leverage, like you say, writing, like you're writing and things like that. You can leverage some of your skill sets online so that you can manage those around an existing job if you do have that, or a family if you do have that, or whatever your existing responsibilities are, if your schedule is such that you can't just spend 6 hours hosting a rave overnight, you know.
Yeah.
You know, that works well for some people, but if you have other obligations that don't make something like that a potential opportunity, then there are so many I've suggested flex jobs before. Flex jobs is a great way to find remote work that you can schedule, temporary part-time remote work that you can schedule around your existing schedule to increase your earning power. But you, like you said, we do need to couple that with building your budgeting muscle, you know, making sure that we're staying on top of all of our expenses, and also making sure that you are not spending mindlessly, because I think that's where the cutting back comes in. If you're spending mm-hmm. mindlessly, if you're not spending with a plan, if you're not focusing on your debt with a plan, then yeah, sometimes just earning more is not going to be enough. So it's kind of maybe a three-pronged
mm-hmm.
approach to the solution. So thank you so much for sharing that. One other thing I definitely want to chat about before we get off is, congratulations, you're a new author.
Oh, thank you.
You're a new author. And so you have actually turned your experience with paying off your debt into a book that is now available. So can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, definitely. So, crazy thing, you know, I started this blog in January 2013, and last year at the Plutus Awards, September 2015, I won the award for best debt blog.
Congratulations.
A total shock and totally amazing. And the very next day, publisher from Coventry House Publishing emailed me and said, I found your blog and saw that you recently won a Plutus Award and were interested in turning your blog into a book.
Nice.
And I was like, are you kidding me? Like, you're lying.
Is this a joke? No.
Yeah.
That's
right.
So cool. What a nice surprise.
And so I tried not to get too excited about it and, you know, talked to them, and it turned out to be a worthwhile process. And, you know, I was able to turn sort of my blog into a book. There's a lot of new content in there, so it's not, you know, just my blog mm-hmm. into a book.
Right.
But there are Dear Debt letters there. So pretty much the way I've structured the book is, it's part memoir, you know, a lot of the story that I've told you today,
mm-hmm.
a lot of actionable advice on how to get started with paying back debt, you know, what debt strategies you can use to get out of debt, you know, how to cut back, how to be a frugal friend, how to earn more, how to negotiate your salary. So it's part memoir, part actionable advice, and then every chapter ends with a Dear Debt letter. So you can sort of see some of the fun Dear Debt letters that I've written over the past 3 years, as well as, you know, some wonderful letters from other people as well.
Nice. And again, if people want to start their process or have the cathartic experience of writing a Dear John, if y'all didn't get that, writing a Dear John letter or Dear Debt letter to your debt, again, can you give us your website and where people can submit that?
Yeah. So my blog is deardebt.com. And you can find the Dear Debt Letters page there to find out more information about the project. as well as my email in case you want to write your letter yourself.
Very cool. I might actually do a Dear Debt letter, too. I thought that was pretty cool.
You should. That'd be awesome.
You know, it's been a while since I've kind of thought about the whole process. So
yeah.
Kind of fun. All right. Well, thank you so much, Melanie. I really appreciate your time.
Of course. Thank you for having me. So great to be on the show.
So now it's time for our community question portion of the podcast, where I get to spin a little cute